Kori Devitam, the lamentation. Shamai Shami, I shall pacify. Madvanai, by my arrows. Bhinnaya, being cut to pieces. Tava, of you. Medasha, by the flesh. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Now, with the help of my arrows, I shall cut you to pieces and with your flesh satisfy the hunger-stricken citizens who are now crying for want of grains. Thus, I shall satisfy the crying citizens of my kingdom. Please repeat after me. Now, with the help of my arrows, I shall cut you to pieces and with your flesh satisfy the hunger-stricken citizens who are now crying for want of grains. Thus I shall satisfy the crying citizens of my kingdom. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here we find some indication of how the government can arrange for the eating of cow flesh. It is here indicated that in a rare circumstances, when there is no supply of grains, the government may sanction the eating of meat. However, when there is sufficient food, the government should not allow the eating of cow's flesh just to satisfy the fastidious tongue. In other words, in rare circumstances, when people are suffering from want of grains, meat eating or flesh eating can be allowed, but not otherwise. The maintenance of slaughterhouses for the satisfaction of the tongue and the killing of animals unnecessarily should never be sanctioned by a government. As described in a previous verse, cows and other animals should be given sufficient grass to eat. If despite a sufficient supply of grass, a cow does not supply milk, and if there is an acute shortage of food, the dried up cow may be utilized to feed the hungry masses of people. According to the law of necessity, first of all, human society must try to produce food grains and vegetables. But if they fail in this, they can indulge in flesh eating. Otherwise not. A human society is presently structured. There is sufficient production of grains all over the world. Therefore, the opening of slaughterhouses cannot be supported. In some nations, there is so much surplus grain that sometimes extra grain is thrown into the sea and sometimes the government forbids further production of grain. The conclusion is that the earth produces sufficient grain to feed the entire population, but the distribution of this grain is restricted due to trade regulation and a desire for profit. Consequently, in some places there is scarcity of grain and in others profuse production. If there were one government on the surface of the earth to handle the distribution of grain, there would be no question of scarcity, no necessity to open slaughterhouses, and no need to present false theories about overpopulation. Amushang shut paritanam artanang paridevitam shamai shami madbanoir bhinnaya stabamedasa. Now with the help of my arrows, I shall cut you to pieces and with your flesh satisfy the hunger-stricken citizens who are now crying for want of grains. Thus, I shall satisfy the crying citizens of my kingdom. So, Prithu Maharaj was very angry with the presiding deity of the earth planet. The earth planet, although it is a planet, but there is a demigod who is presiding over this planet. So when there is proper, when there is negligence on the part of this personality who is supposed to maintain the earth planet, supposed to take care of the earth planet, then the king should take proper action. And that point has been made here by Prithu Maharaj. Now, who is Prithu Maharaj? Prithu Maharaj is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in this respect, we have to understand that Prithu Maharaj's action is actually the action of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here, through this chastisement of the earth planet, who appeared in the form of a cow, a very important point has been made. And Srila Prabhupada elaborated that point through his Bhaktivedanta purport. And the point is that when there is scarcity of food, then flesh eating, meat eating can be approved, can be accepted, but not otherwise. Unfortunately, in today's world, unnecessarily animals are being slaughtered. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Radha Rash Bihari Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. As Prithu Maharaj chastised the earth planet here, that actually the problem with the earth was that there was no production of grain, because in the previous verse it has been mentioned that earth planet, the personified deity of the earth planet, Dharitri or Vasundhara, she has many names, and she kept the seeds of the grains and fruit-bearing plants deep within herself. The entire earth planet became covered with forests, and as a result of that, proper food grains could not be cultivated, could not be produced. When the entire earth planet is covered with forest, then how will there be production of grains? The forest had to be cleaned. And then only by preparing the ground properly, there can be cultivation of grains and foodstuffs. So, King Prithu Maharaj actually made this point that you are not doing your duty. You are not supplying the foodstuff to my citizens. And we must remember also in this respect that Prithu Maharaj was a ruler of not just one piece of land. Prithu Maharaj was not the ruler of one country. Prithu Maharaj was the ruler of the entire earth planet. The entire earth planet was his kingdom. This point also Prabhupada touches at the purport towards the later part of his purport. We'll come to that point later. But Prithu Maharaj is making the point that it is your responsibility to supply the food, but you are not supplying the food. Therefore, I'm going to chastise you. Of course, here also we have to take make another consideration that Earth planet could not produce the food by herself. It is the people who cultivate and generate food. And the trouble actually was King Vena. King Vena was killed, and since there was no king the civilized human society became very much lawless. There was anarchy. And people also became quite independent, and they didn't know what to do and what not to do. And as a result of that, there was chaos everywhere. But Prithu Maharaj took it that the earth, it is earth planet's duty to produce the food, to supply the food. Because another name of earth planet is Vasundhara. That is who generates who supplies the necessities of human beings. She is meant to supply the needs of the people. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj held the presiding deity of the earth planet responsible, and he gave a reason for that. He said, you are a demigod and you are having the share of your sacrifice. The demigods are offered sacrifices, and by receiving the sacrifice they become pleased, and then they have a responsibility to supply whatever human society needs. So he said, you are taking your share of sacrifice, but you are not fulfilling your responsibility. And so in this verse he is showing how heavy he became. He said, I'm going to cut you to pieces with my arrows. And I'll offer your flesh, medasa. This particular word, medasa, means flesh. I'll offer your flesh to these hungry citizens of my kingdom. Of course, we have to understand that Prithu Maharaj is just chastising the earth. He would never have done that. Because in the Vedic culture, torturing the cow is not done. No matter how difficult the situation may be, cow killing hasn't been approved. Like, this is the Vedic culture. Of course, in the purport, Prabhupada is not speaking about the Vedic culture as such. Prabhupada was speaking about the other cultures that are where cow killing is going on now. And he is making that point that it should not be approved by the government. Because cow killing actually involves a lot of sinful activity. Killing cow is extremely sinful act. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, this is one thing that is never accepted. Vedic culture will not accept cow killing. Even Krishna, when Arishtasura came, it's a demon who came in the form of taking the form of a cow. So Krishna had to kill him. And we see the reaction of Radharani. You have committed a lot of sin by killing the cow. Krishna reasoned, look, it's a demon, it's not a cow, it's a demon. Assume the form of a cow. But Radharani said, no. Even though it came in the form of a cow, but still it was a cow. Even though it's a demon, but since it assumed the form of a cow, so, and you killed, so you have accrued the killing, the sin involved in cow killing. Now, how to purify from that sin? The only way that sin could be purified by taking bath in all the holy places. So Krishna said, fine. So he created a Shyamkund. He immediately called all the personified places of pilgrimage. So they immediately appeared and started to offer prayers to Krishna, and the result was Shyamkund was manifest. Krishna just struck the ground with his heel and the earth sank in, all the personified places of pilgrimage, tirthas, appeared, and the place became filled with water, and that is Shyamkund. Then the gopis were awestruck seeing this wonderful act of Krishna. So they felt, oh, now we have to match it. So they said, what to do? We can't accept this defeat. Look at this wonderful act. Now we must do something to match it. Radha said, fine, we'll make another pond, another water body, reservoir of water, and that is Radha Kund. And what was Radha Kund filled with? The molten love of Srimati Radharani. It's not water, it's the love of Srimati Radharani in the form of water. That's why Radha Kund is considered to be the most auspicious of all places. Just by taking bath in Radha Kund, one can get Krishna prema. So, to go back to the point, Prithu Maharaj is threatening the cow that, Mother Earth, I'll kill you. And Prabhupada is making the point that yes, when there is no food, when there is no food grains, then meat eating can be accepted, meat eating can be approved, but not otherwise. In today's society, there is so much food grains. Actually, human food is grains, fruits, nuts, and so forth. That's the human food. Flesh is food for animals, or cannibals. Who are the cannibals, actually? Cannibals are the people, those who are so uncivilized that they do not know how to cultivate land. They don't know how to cultivate land. They don't know how to grow food. They're like animals. So when they're hungry, they will eat anything that is available. In order to survive, man must eat something. And eat, food means living things. Jiva sa jiva jivanam. That one living entity survives by eating some other living entity. Anything that we eat is living. Very few non-living stuffs are edible. Like wherever it is, there is life. Only living things we can eat. Like grains, leaves, fruits, vegetables, milk. They're all live food coming from life source. Milk comes from life source. Grains, fruits, they're all living. Some are in an inert stage, some are in a conscious stage. But it has been pointed out that the living entity's food should be inert foodstuff. Living things in an inert state. Why? Because living entities are very sensitive. I mean, human living entities are sensitive. And human beings are susceptible to the karmic reaction to the greatest extent. So, if a conscious entity is killed, then it feels pain. More conscious one is, more acute is the feeling of pleasure and pain. Not only pain, pleasure also. The more conscious one is, higher will be the degree of his pleasure, and to that extent, higher will be the degree of his pain. So when a conscious being is slaughtered, killed, then it feels the pain, death pain. Death is painful. And that pain permeates through the entire body, through every single cell of the body, the pain is transmitted. And when somebody eats the flesh, meaning he is actually eating the cells of that creature. So when he eats the flesh of that living entity that has been slaughtered, it actually feels the pain also. It eats the pain. And those pain accumulates in his body. And then at some point, it reaches an optimum point, critical point, when that pain, accumulated pain, comes out. One feels, one becomes subjected to that pain. So it's a very simple law of nature. That's why conscious beings, human beings, should try to avoid eating conscious creatures like animals, birds, etc. Fish, they're conscious. Their consciousness is more advanced. Whereas the trees and plants, they're not that conscious. And another consideration is that grains are seeds. The grains are not living entities in an active life form. It is in a dormant life form. So when one eats grains, there is hardly any pain involved. Because what happens with the grain? The oshadhis, the grain-bearing plants, they naturally die. When the grains ripen, the plants die. And then only it is harvested. So the plants are not killed, so to say. Sometimes people come up with this argument that, well, trees and plants also have life, so why are you eating them? The reason is this: yes, one has to survive by eating some other living object. But it is preferable, it is advisable, that one indulges in less living, less conscious entities. One may say, well, cabbage has a life. But the cabbage, what is the consciousness of a cabbage? Is the consciousness of a cabbage and a goat the same? No. The cabbage will feel pain, but very little pain. A cauliflower will feel some pain, but very little pain. But when we collect grains, there is no pain involved. There is no pain left there. Because the plants have already died. And when we take fruits, we don't have to cut the tree to get the fruits. They automatically ripen and we can pick them, pluck them, and collect them and eat them. So human food is vegetables or vegetarian stuff, which does not really indulge in conscious living entities. Rather, very, very low degree of conscious entities, which is considered to be the covered consciousness. The trees and plants fall in trees and plants fall on the state of covered consciousness. That way the Vedas are giving the description of different degrees of consciousness. There is one level of living entities, those who are in a covered consciousness. The trees and plants fall in that category. Achhadito Chetan, covered consciousness. And then there are shrunken consciousness, from worms and insects up to the animals, they fall in a shrunken state of consciousness. They're conscious, their consciousness is quite apparent, but it is in a shrunken state, not fully extended. But the human beings are fall in the category, human beings fall in the category of bad consciousness. Now bud apparently is also in a shrunken state. The petals of a bud are in a shrunken state. But the bud has the ability to bloom. So human beings are apparently also in a shrunken state of consciousness. Actually there is not much of a difference between an animal and human beings in his consciousness. But the human beings have the ability to expand his consciousness, which the animals don't have. The child is born, child is practically in a shrunken state of consciousness. But then gradually the child grows and its consciousness develops. Now with an animal it doesn't develop very far. You can see a calf and a cow practically in the same state of consciousness. A calf right after birth just stands up on four legs and starts to move around. And a grown up cow also practically does the same, moves around. Maybe as a calf it doesn't know what to eat and it just indulges in the cow's milk. Then it learns how to eat grass and so forth. But with human being we can see obviously there is a possibility of expand his consciousness. And this expansion of consciousness again is not the material consciousness, expansion of material consciousness, when they mean the expansion of consciousness, the bud developing into, bloom into a flower is actually the spiritual aspect of consciousness. That only human beings have, nobody else has. And what is the criteria for a bud to bloom, if we take it as a lotus bud, for a lotus to bloom, lotus bud to bloom, it needs the shelter of water and exposure to the sun. So for human consciousness to develop, there these two criteria are essential. Here the sun is Krishna, and the shelter of the water is the spiritual master. So when a human being comes under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, becomes exposed to Krishna, his consciousness begins to develop. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Radha Rash Bihari Lalita Vishakha Devi Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. Gaur Premanande. So in this way the human consciousness develops, and that's why the human being should be very, very concerned, very careful about what he eats. Again, this is the next consideration is, you are what you eat. Because what you are eating, that is being transformed into your body cells. So the food that you are eating is generating the body, is transforming into the body cells, which is giving rise to the body. And especially when the body is made of undesirable elements which are not meant for human culture, then it will create a chaos in the human life, individually and collectively. That's why time and time again it has been pointed out that meat eating should not be allowed in the human society. Those who are uncivilized, those who cannot stay without eating meat, their case is different. Let them go to the forest. That's what used to happen. Those who wanted to indulge in meat eating, they had to go to the forest, not in the civilized human society. Vedic culture did not allow unnecessary meat eating in this way. And in the human society, there is enough foodstuff. Nature provides abundantly. In nature, there is no scarcity. In today's world also we see there is such abundance of food everywhere. But what is happening, people are not satisfied with the foodstuff that is actually meant for him, which has been provided by nature for human beings. They are indulging in meat eating. And the result is, as I pointed out, the pain and the karma, the sinful reactions that goes along with the meat eating, one is becoming liable to that. And eventually he will have to pay the price. He has to pay, like he'll have to undergo the suffering. Cows are being slaughtered. The pain that the cows are feeling, they are being accumulated somewhere. Where are they accumulated? They are accumulated in the bodies of those who have been eating the cows. And then by nature's arrangement, at one point, they all have to be subjected to that pain. They are in this way, they are inviting a very, very dangerous situation for themselves. Therefore, intelligent class of people should be careful about that and not indulge in this kind of activities, rather prevent themselves from that kind of activity. And then Prabhupada is making another point towards the end of this purport that it is always preferable that there is one ruler on the planet. Actually, that is the nature's arrangement. Every planet has a ruler. All these planets that you see in the night sky, they're not empty spaces. They're not empty. There are living entities there. And all those planets have a ruler, a presiding personality. Like sun planet has a ruler. We also know from the Vedic scriptures the duration of a ruler's reign, for how long one will reign over the planet. And we know who is the ruler of the sun planet now? Vivashwan. Who is the ruler of the moon planet? Somdev. Who is the ruler of the Jupiter? Brihaspati. Who is the ruler of Venus? Shukracharya. In this way, all these planets have a ruler, have their respective rulers. Similarly, Earth planet also has her ruler. And that used to be the system, that used to be the culture till the beginning of Kali Yuga. Prabhupada pointed out that the last sovereign ruler over the Earth planet was Parikshit Maharaj. And from his time, that's the time when Kali Yuga began. At the beginning stage of Kali Yuga also there was one ruler, Parikshit Maharaj. And that was only 5,000 years ago. Prior to that, it is one ruler who is to rule over the Earth planet. But now what is happening, due to the influence of Kali, democracy has come in, monarchy has... First of all, what happened? The Earth planet became divided. No more one ruler. Previously also, there were other rulers, but they used to all become subordinate under one principal ruler who is to establish his right by performing Ashwamedh Yajna or Rajasuya Yajna. By performing this sacrifice, they used to establish their sovereignty. But with in the age of Kali, that structure, that system has been abolished. And what has happened? First thing that happened is the kingdoms became, the earth planet became divided. They didn't want to accept one ruler. Everybody wanted to become the supreme ruler. And then they started to give up the authority of the Brahmanas. And on the other hand, Brahmanas also became unqualified in the age of Kali. So in one hand, the Brahmanas became unqualified and the Kshatriyas therefore didn't want to accept the authority of those Brahmanas. And then they became independent. They became autocratic, they became tyrannical, and as a result of that, human society began to suffer. People in the society began to suffer. And then came revolution. They got rid of the kings. And by getting rid of the kings, they established the ruling by the people. Democracy. By the people, of the people, for the people. And in this way, the human society has become degraded and it's becoming more and more degraded due to the influence of the age of Kali. And the only way out of that degraded situation, only solution to this is Krishna consciousness. Accepting the authority of Krishna. There is no powerful ruler to rule over the kingdom, rule over the planet and establish law and order, establish dharma. Therefore, collectively we have to progress to achieve that goal. Collective. Sankirtan. Very mercifully Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave the ultimate solution. And Krishna is there. Krishna is there. If we take shelter of Krishna, Krishna will protect. And if we take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna will provide. Therefore, those who have taken shelter of Krishna, they don't have to worry about anything. Krishna will protect. Therefore, devotee is not interested in what is happening in the outside world. Because they know that they are inviting this distressful situation for themselves. They are not accepting Krishna. They are not accepting the rules of the Vedas and the Samhitas. They are not conducting their lives according to the tenets of Dharma. They've become totally reckless. They're acting in an absolutely irresponsible way. So naturally they will suffer and they will invite misery for themselves. And ultimately there'll be a massive repercussion of this reckless lifestyle, sinful way of living. Now it's not that the devotees are also safe, like when the whole situation is that chaotic, there will be some reactions of that. But devotees are prepared. Because they know they have taken shelter of Krishna and Marovi Rakhovi Jo Ichha Tohara. Krishna, if you want to kill me or if you want to keep me, it's up to you. If I have to die, I'm fine. I'm prepared to die. And we should not be under any illusion that now that we have accepted Krishna consciousness, now that we have become devotees, nothing untoward, nothing undesirable will happen to us. It can happen. But a devotee accepts everything as Krishna's mercy. It is not that Krishna will always protect the devotees. Sometimes the devotees also die, and ultimately everybody will have to die. But the point I was making that while serving Krishna, sometimes we see that the devotees are accepting death. One example is Jatayu. Jatayu, the bird and son of Arun, a friend of Dasarath, Ramchandra's father, the king of the birds, tried to protect Sita from when Ravan was stealing Sita. And Jatayu fought with Ravan, such a valiant bird, that he gave Ravan a tough time. Ravan was so powerful that even the demigods were afraid of him. And here Jatayu gave him such a tough time that he broke his chariot, Pushpak Viman, Pushpak Rath. His chariot was broken. The chariot driver was killed. And Ravan fell on the ground. And then Ravan eventually cut his wings with his sword in a fight. And so Jatayu died. But death is not the important thing. The main consideration, with what objective he gave his life. He gave his life in order to serve Sri Ramchandra. And as a result of that, he achieved the ultimate perfection of his existence. At the time of his death, Lord Ramchandra was present personally. He was holding his body in his arms. And he did the funeral ceremony of Jatayu himself. So what a good fortune. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is conducting his posthumous rites. So this is how the Lord reciprocates with his devotees. Sometimes the devotees die, sometimes the devotees are saved. Prahlad Maharaj had been saved time and time again. Parikshit Maharaj was saved when he was at the womb of his mother. But then again Parikshit Maharaj is cursed. At that time Parikshit Maharaj didn't beg Krishna to save him. He just accepted, this must be Krishna's divine arrangement that I leave this planet. So as a devotee, we should be open to whatever Krishna wants. Marovi rakhovi jo iccha tohara. If you want me to die, I will die. But let me die serving you. Let that be the goal of my life. Let my whole life be offered to your lotus feet and be committed, dedicated to your service. That is the mood of a devotee. I do not want anything for myself. Let my whole life be committed to your service. And then the perfection will be achieved without any doubt. Srila Prabhupada gave us the perfect process, and now it's up to us to practice it. If we do it, our life will be successful. There's no doubt about that. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari. Does anybody have any question? Yeah. Hari Bol.
Now it's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam's purport that Prabhupada says that Kshatriyas were sanctioned to kill and also sometimes eat flesh also. So my question is, why was this disparity was there for and given sanction to the Kshatriyas to eat flesh at that time?
As you say, like, they have been authorized, but not on a daily basis. As I pointed out, meat eating is done away from human civilization. They'd go to the forest, kill the animal, and indulge in that there. And they would kill the animals, wild animals, for two purposes. to prevent the society from being attacked by those ferocious animals. When they would create disturbance, they would kill those animals. Or they would go there to practice their the art of archery. So not whimsically, just bring the animals, cull and slaughter them and cook them at home and then eat them.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. After performing the Tulsi Aarti, we perform Tulsi Pradikshana and we chant this mantra, Yani Kani Cha Papani Brahma Atyadi Kani Cha. So what is the importance of chanting the mantra while performing the Pradikshana, or what is the importance of performing the Pradikshana?
Do you know the meaning of this mantra? The meaning of this mantra is that all the sins that has been acquired with every step while circumambulating Tulasi, all the way up to killing a Brahmana, the sin of killing a Brahmana, even that, I mean, which is considered to be the worst possible sin, even that sin is absolved just by circumambulating Tulasi. Good that you asked, Yes, when you do something, you must understand why you are doing it. When you are chanting some mantra, you must understand what's the meaning of that mantra. And that is the meaning. Brahma hattadi kani cha, tani tani pranashanti. Pranashanti means absolved, destroyed. Pradakshina pade pade, with every step of circumambulation. Yes, he had a question and then
answered. Hare Krishna Maharaj, when you spoke about Radhakund, on the end you said just by taking bath in Radhakund, you can attain Krishna Prem. Does it also mean you will attain Krishna Prem?
Why should it be unreal?
Excuse me?
I said, why should it be unreal? Yes. One gets Krishna Prem. One gets Krishna Prem, but the question is whether we are able to receive it. If our consciousness is so blunt that it cannot register what is happening, then it is our fault. So while we are taking bath in Radhakund, we should also be internally prepared to receive that Krishna Prem. And Prabhupada also made another point in general, in practicing devotional service, that even if things doesn't happen immediately, don't worry. Carry on practicing. Like a child can walk, but it has to practice. While trying to learn to walk, it falls, it gets hurt, it cries, but still again it stands up, and by practice it eventually he achieves perfection. So similarly, in our spiritual life, initially what we are doing, we are practicing devotional service, sadhana bhakti. We are in a sadhana stage, we are practicing, but through the practice eventually we'll achieve perfection. Right? So even if we are not perfect now, it doesn't matter. But still we should take bath in Radhakund and beg Srimati Radharani's mercy, with the understanding that we are actually bathing in Radharani's love for Krishna. This is not water, it's actually Radharani's love for Krishna. Now can you imagine when the consciousness is developed and we can literally feel that this is Radharani's love for Krishna, what's going to happen to our consciousness? Do you think Krishna Prem will be difficult?
No.
It's just a matter of unconditioning our present state of existence. We are so much into material consciousness that we cannot really perceive or appreciate or even register the spiritual consciousness.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, in the class you mentioned when a human being is born, when a child is born, he is in a bud consciousness. And he can reach up to blossoming.
Not a bud, in a shrunken state.
Shrunken state.
But of course it is a bud. Human beings are in a bud state.
Yeah. And we hear that human species have 400,000 level of consciousness. So, I mean, is it more to it or how do we understand?
400,000 species, not 400,000 consciousness as such. Consciousness is unlimited. Every individual is a conscious being and he has his indigenous consciousness. But generally they are categorized into different forms of life. So, human body has 400,000 different species. Right? That is actually the body's consideration. But the point is, every human being has the ability, every human being has been endowed with the opportunity to expand his consciousness to an unlimited extent, which means fully bloomed state of consciousness, fully conscious, fully Krishna conscious state of existence. That prerogative every single human being has. That's why Krishna consciousness is open for everybody. Everybody. We don't make any consideration of qualification or disqualification. There is no consideration of caste and creed and so forth. Open to all. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Okay, there is a question at the back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you mentioned that trees are conscious but seeds are not so conscious, right? So someone can argue similarly about eggs, so how we explain that?
Yeah, eggs are also, but the thing is that the eggs have, they are also in a dormant state, but what they are eating is the white and red stuff, orange stuff. That is very similar to flesh. Like for example, a seed can be lying there for years to gather. It won't rot. Or even if it rots, it won't become putrid. But let an egg rot. So that is the difference. That stuff, when it goes into your body, in the stomach what happens? It rots. Now consider potato rotting and an egg rotting. You can see the difference. When an egg is rotting, you won't be able to stay in that room. Hare Krishna, all blur.
In earlier time, there was no modern transportation system or communication system. Then how the one king was ruling the whole earth? I mean five continents, and all the people were accepting that authority. How the ordinances were passed on or the messages were received and all that.
Yeah, to say that there was no transportation system at that time will be a mistake. You see, yeah, aircraft...
Modern and effective, like...
No, I mean, aircrafts were there those days also. Ravana had Pushpak Viman. That may not be so many, but they had this facility, and they were so, you know, the horses drawn chariots used to move so fast, much faster than today's horses' movement, because not only the human beings lost their ability, the horses also lost their ability with the advent of Kali. With the all living creatures are, not only the living creatures, even the herbs and plants are losing their potency. Once Prabhupada told about Ayurvedic treatment, he said the problem with Ayurveda is that the herbs have lost their potency and the human system has become gross. The human system has become gross and the herbs have lost their potency, therefore it's not working. Therefore the allopathic system came. They are taking just the extract to make it potent. Like, it's not possible to eat, say, 5 kilos of herb. But if the essential part of the medicine is extracted from 5 kilos and put it into one tablet, and that's what allopathic medicine actually is in general. And main point is the people were extremely capable those days, and they could move.
Yeah,
they used to move. Another consideration is that previously the entire planet, the mandala, was one land covered by one ocean. It was one piece of land which later on became divided. These different continents are actually consideration of different breaking off this planet into different sections or fragments. Another consideration is what to speak of traveling through the Earth planet. Those days people had the ability to even go to the celestial planet. They could go to heavenly planet, they could go to moon planet, they could go to sun planet. The proper medium of transportation was there. To think that, you know, like civilization started only 200 years ago when the British came to India, that's not the right understanding.
Thank you.
Yes.
When Johnny was relaying to Peter Rasta what was happening on the battlefield,
yeah,
by his mystic code,
exactly,
by his siddha, he could tell what was going on there, he told the king.
Right. Like, how come Sanjay was narrating what was happening in the battlefield of Kurukshetra to Dhritarashtra? He had that, the power. He didn't need a television to look at it. He had this ability to just perceive what was happening there. Now, if television can see, why can't human beings see? Right? So similarly, if the vehicles are moving, but there was different, more advanced means of transportation those days. Thank you. Yes, this is the last question.
Huh? Maharaj, Hare Krishna. It is said that when no other vegetarian stuff is available for survival, one can survive on meat. This is not applicable to devotees, am I correct?
Yeah. Devotees would rather die but take anything without offering to Krishna. And it has happened. Prabhupada actually, that good point that you brought up. You see, Prabhupada actually mentioned that in 1942, there was a massive famine created by the British. You see, British, in order to force the Indians to join the army to fight the Second World War on behalf of the British, they burnt all the crops, and there was a massive scarcity of food throughout India, especially in the regions of the eastern part of India. And there had been many, many, many people died of starvation, but they did not indulge in meat eating to survive. And what to speak of meat eating, Prabhupada even said that although thousands of people died of starvation, there was not a single case of looting or stealing recorded. They died, but they wouldn't loot a shop. That's how pure and moral people used to be. Yes, devotees who are situated in proper knowledge, proper understanding, they will not indulge in sinful activities or improper activities, even though they may be dying. Another example is, a cow may die, will it ever eat meat? A cow may die of starvation, but will it ever eat meat? No. Because that's the nature of a cow. So similarly, the devotees develop a specific nature. and it will be difficult for them to give it up. To tell you frankly, even to read that purport, you know, is quite, I mean, I was finding it quite shocking to me. Because, of course, Prabhupada was making that point about the non... Prabhupada was criticizing the government structure. That why are you allowing meat eating when there is such abundance of food? If there is scarcity, well, that can be allowed. But that doesn't mean that it should be, there should be a blanket license. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Srila Prabhupada ki.